You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Big E on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We can also be heard on the web and on demand at the WWBC app. And of course, you could find us on the internet. Website.
Sita Media Inc.
It's on Twitter as well. It's on Facebook. It's all over the place.
It's all over the place.
Just Google Sita and Friends and it comes right up.
Yep. Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and you'll really get it.
Yeah. Actually, for some reason, if you just put in Sita and Friends, it comes right up.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's great. Anyways, today my co-host Ellen and I, we're going to be heating up the airwaves with a lot of topics. We're talking about kitchen table topics as well as things that are going on around here and around the nation. And I have to tell you, Ellen, this show today is all about science.
Yes.
Like you said, we paired it up really well.
You did pair it up.
I did, right?
Well. Yes.
So in studio, we have Kelly Theron.
Therion.
Yeah. French. And Kelly is here. She is the product manager for professional development for ABA Technologies. And we're going to be talking today about human behavior in the workplace.
Yes.
So welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, we're excited to have you here too. And Ellen, as usual, thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
To help co-host Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Right. So anything that anybody calls out during the show, we'll be putting it on Facebook right away. So you'll be able to see it right underneath the post, any websites, or any information.
We try to do a Facebook Live, but we didn't really have time. So for our listeners who are tuning in today, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is a fun, unscripted, with an ED, educational and very informative show. Whether you love science, whether you want to buy a home, you want to learn to save, you need a mortgage, maybe you're thinking about going back to college, maybe you want to learn about a trade, you're not getting along with your coworkers in the workplace, you're not getting along with your husband and children, whatever it is, you got a little drama, whatever. This is the place to listen every Monday because
this year
we have solutions.
And this year you've done a really great job to look at social issues and try and get on the folks that are experiencing some hardships in any part of their lives. And hopefully we have some answers or at least some resources, right? Everybody can follow through with.
Well, the thing is, you know, with life, if we change our behavior, we will see change no matter where we go.
That's right.
And all it takes is to actually look in the mirror and say, who are you? Ask yourself, who are you? Where are you going? And what's your purpose on earth? And I think at the end of the day, everybody wants to be loved and appreciated, but they also want to love our universe and our environment because we are our environment. So that's why I'm excited to have calling in today, Daniel Evans, and he is the chairman of the Board of the People for Reason and Progress. It's P-O-R-P.
Right. People of Reason and Progress.
I like that. It sounds so fancy, right? And P-O-R-P is what they call themselves. They're on Facebook. They also have a website. They're a social welfare organization dedicated to supplanting unreasonable political action with ethical, evidence-based discourse that benefits the public interest. In other words, they believe in science. And yes, whatever happens in our world, all over the world, affects everybody, like global warming. If you cut the trees down in the forest, what are you going to do with the land? Wars affect our nation because it affects human trafficking, people coming on the border, famine, people hungry, living in tents, refugees, whatever. It has an effect on our world, right? So we're very grateful to have Daniel on the phone. Are you on the phone already, Mr. Daniel Evans?
Yes, I am. Thank you so much, Tita. Really excited to be here.
Well, thank you. Well, hey, this is, of course, you know, our show is Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and we're heard all over the world on the internet, plus right here in Brevard County, Florida, and people are just tuning in their cars or they're listening online. So, Danielle, we're so excited to have you call in, and thank you for sponsoring the show today. So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and PORP.
Yeah. So the People of Reason and Progress originally started back shortly after the November 2016 election. We were a political action committee to begin with, and our focus was on, as you mentioned, evidence-based policymaking, the idea that policy should not be based on the partisan ideology of who is promoting it, who is coming up with it. You're not just believing something because you agree with somebody's ideology. You agree with the idea whether or not it's evidence-based or not. Is there actual data and evidence to support it? And so we recently restructured into a nonprofit, nonpartisan advocacy organization, and we're supporting across the country. We have a number of local-level advocates working in their local communities to manage things. Like, we have one person in Ohio who's working on vaccine policy. We have a couple people in Michigan working on education and wealth inequality resolution. We have a nationwide network of people who are writing or scouting or volunteering or other things for us to help fulfill our mission to bring evidence-based policymaking out of Washington and into local communities across the country.
Right, and the thing is, you know, when we speak about the environment and we speak about social behavior, we know that everything starts in the home, right? And it's little things that all of us could do at home to help not just our environment, but policymaking as well. Simple things, I know when I was running for office, one of the big things here in Brevard was the Indian River Lagoon and what had happened to our lagoon with the muck and the dirt and all the, our lagoon was not healthy. And we all talked about, you know, little things we can do at home to change our behavior in order to affect change on our planet. And I see I see on your website that's a big thing for you guys as well. So talk a little bit about what can we all do collectively to help our planet?
Well, there's two elements to this. One is, you know, we hear all the time about behaving sustainably, recycling, making sure we're not using excess water and light, and all those are really good ideas and really helpful if we all pitch in and do our part. But that's only part of the equation, and that's something that we figured out as an organization, is that no matter how much we do individually, there will always be policies and ideas from our local and state and federal governments that will influence how our individual behavior, how much it improves environmental protection. And so it's not just enough to, it's a great start to get involved in local level sustainability and involved in your home and everything, but there also has to be an advocacy component to this. If you recognize, like you did, Sita, like there were policies that were issues that were causing problems in your local community, you have to stand up for them. Because it's not just enough to recycle a little bit more often. You have to be aware of the political and socioeconomic issues.
Yes,
that
yes, because we had
changed fundamentally.
Yeah, because we had we had years of our lagoon becoming unhealthy and so much muck built up, and then all of a sudden we have all these politicians who were talking about the septic tanks and the drainage and the sewage and what happens when it rains and what happens when you cut your lawn and you put chemicals on it. And all of a sudden, yes, people started taking interest and it did affect legislation.
That's exactly the point. It's a great start to get involved with your home and your family and your friends in order to do things more sustainably. But you have to be aware of the greater social and political forces surrounding it and to get engaged. It's really easy for people to think, oh, wow, it's this massive system is against me, or there's so much going on. How do I combat climate change, this massive, like, international force? It starts with you saying, I'm fed up with this, and getting engaged and talking to your local advocates and getting involved in local organizations. And that's how we got involved in Florida in the first place, because when we were a PAC, we heard about the Florida Candidates for Science, who you were a member of.
Yes.
And all of you stood up and realize, you know what, I'm fed up, I'm done with this, I need to make a change, I'm going to run for office to stand for something, to stand for environmental protection. And that's exactly the kind of voice
part of it, too, is a lot of us, we have, as we age, you know, every decade brings something reasoning in our minds and around in our environment for people like myself. And when you have children and grandchildren, you start wanting to leave a footprint on this earth that's cleaner. You want to leave a better earth that you founded for your grandchildren and your children. And if that means you have to sacrifice and run for office and do all the things it takes to try to get elected, we do it because we believe in science and what it can do for our earth, our world, not just here in the United States, but globally as well. So I wanted to ask you, how did you get involved in PORP?
That's a funny story, and this is one of the really great things about our organization is that part of the interest in us being local is that we try to be kind of casual in our communication to get to know real people. We're not just like schmoozing with the political elite. And I actually started about this time last year because I've been following the organization on social media for a while, and I just happened to send a message to one of the moderators on our official Facebook page, which is facebook.com/theofficialPORP for anyone watching, shameless plug. And I said, you guys do some really cool stuff. Is there anything I can do to help out? And they were like, oh, yeah, absolutely. Come on in. And I started looking for interesting stories for them. I started talking to our founder, and we started writing articles together. And then over the course of the next couple of months, I kind of went up the chain. Now here I am at the head. But it's not just me. We have something like 30 volunteers who are coming in and out and donating their time. Nobody gets paid for our organization. So it's not just, you know, my journey through. It's our journey as an organization where we've built a lot of this stuff from the ground up. We have a writing team that didn't exist 6 months ago of 15 people. We have local people in several states across the country who were not engaged with us this time last year. So, you know, we're all building together as an organization because we all care about getting involved in what little we can do. And it's not just, you know, talking to the politicians. It's not just talking to the people in Washington. It's getting people engaged in their local communities and realizing that they themselves can make a difference with a little bit of support. And we want to be that helping hand as an organization.
Right. So, and you know, that's the nice thing about, like, I was born in the islands. I was born in Trinidad and Tobago, and I was raised in a village. And, you know, when you're born in a village and you have an advantage over so many people who were in that village to immigrate to the United States, and you tend to use your experience in life to move forward, right? And when I was running for office, they would ask me about sustainability. And I would go back into my memory bank and think about when I was a child, we had rain barrels, we had clotheslines. We had houses that some of the walls were made out of mud mixed with the cow waste. We had firesides that we cooked with, you know, the firewood and that we built ourselves and made. And so we somehow or the other with our religion and the way we were raised, we were part of nature and we saw the beautiful parts of nature in the food we grew, and we had none of this. It was food that was grown organic. You know, we didn't have any chemicals. And as I now, you know, I'm in the United States, and while I was running for office, I kept thinking back to how healthy we were and how happy because collectively the village we took care of each other. And that's what I like about what you all are doing. You're trying to bring back, in some ways, that feeling collectively that all of us are in this together.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's so many orders of magnitude of complexity within American policymaking that fits into what you're talking about. And it would be, you know, it's really easy if in a small, local, rural community that doesn't have all kinds of, you know, the government-like involvement in everything, it's easy to say, oh, we're going to set up rain barrels and do this. But now, because of the United States, we have a complicated policy infrastructure that needs to be navigated carefully. And that's where science comes in, and that's where data and evidence comes in, where you can't just say, it's easy to say that you can just put a rain barrel on your roof, but there's so many things that are governing how we approach that policy at local, state, and federal levels. That's why we as an organization try to be involved with people who are motivated like you, but might feel overwhelmed or might feel frustrated by there just seems to be so much going on, so much complexity. Our goal is to help people navigate through that to enact evidence-based reform in their local communities.
Right,
go ahead.
We've had the Marine Resource Council on our show, and they've talked so much about these type of things and how much science is helping right here in Brevard County, Florida, with what's going on with our situation with our lagoon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, science is all around us. It's one thing that, you know, you think about, I said this on a podcast a couple of weeks ago, you think about the fact that I'm calling in on my cell phone and you're on the radio, and there's think of all the science that's involved in just us having a conversation. Science surrounds us in not just in the way that we treat our water and our environment, but in our lives, the desks that we sit at, the food that we eat. There's so much that goes into it. And our mission, or part of our mission, is to help people understand that without science, we don't have a civilization. We have built ourselves around these scientific principles, and they shouldn't be abandoned just because we feel that one ideology or one political ideology works for us.
Well, it makes a person think.
Values.
Well, what you're doing makes us all think. I mean, that's what it's all about. That's why Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we have so many people that tune in and listen to us because we're real. We talk about real stuff and what people are thinking about. So tell me, when you say something is ethical, evidence-based, and it's a discourse that benefits the public, what do you actually mean by that?
Yeah, so that's definitely a complicated phrase to go through. But basically, when we were discussing about how to move our organization forward, we kind of realized that the phrase evidence-based policymaking can be, you know, there's evidence for anything that you want to do. There's evidence to support really bad policies, like, oh, if I do this, then this really bad outcome will work. So we wanted to frame the concept of using evidence and policy in a productive way. And the way that we decided to do that was by saying, well, what policies have evidence that benefit, as I said, the public interest? If will this particular policy do the most good for the most people possible who are everyday Americans? Not the political elite, not the rich and famous, but the public who are really affected by the major decisions that affect us, the local everyday people who are, in your case, affected by the lagoon water being contaminated and having issues in water quality or air quality or income inequality or all these things that are affecting us. What can we do to say, here is this policy that will benefit you, here are the data and the evidence and facts to back that up? It's very motivated to be public focused, trying to benefit the most Americans, the most people possible.
Well, you know, the sad thing with our lagoon was a lot of people didn't take interest until we had red tide, and they were sent to the emergency rooms with red eyes, actually, and nasal and congestion. And then a lot of them didn't take notice until we actually saw the fish that had died and washed ashore, mm-hmm. and people had pictures on their phones. And then they started saying, wait a minute, something is not right with the nitrogen and phosphorus in the water.
Times when they were doing all of those autopsies on the fish to find out what was killing them, they found all those cigarette butts. So they stopped a lot of smoking. They made policies to stop smoking on the beaches.
And so that was very evidence-based, right?
Very evidence-based. Yes. Yeah. But there's a second level of component to that where, you know,
in effect, the pocketbook
there's
too.
Robust there's like prevention involved. Like there was, I'm sure there's a lot of science that goes into, you know, saying if this particular set of circumstances, like if people are throwing the cigarette butts in, if they're having lots of excess runoff of pesticides or whatever that's going into their water, there's science to show, or there's scientific process to say, if this continues to happen, these red tides and fish die-offs and contaminations and issues will happen. And so it's not just saying, oh, wait, this happened, now how do we fix it? It's predicting what's going to happen next using scientific principles. And that's what scientists do with climate change and environmental pollution. And, you know, I work in infectious disease microbiology. We do kinds of, you know, evidence-based prediction all the time. Our policy needs to shift more towards the front end, where we're thinking about how are we going to prevent future problems rather than just throwing Band-Aids onto our issues that we have
right now. Right, and we had a lot of people in our town who depended on the river for fishing. We had restaurants who were getting their food from the river. And once it started affecting the economy and people started saying, well, I'm not going to eat that, then we started seeing a lot more politicians get involved. People who weren't talking about the lagoon came out of the woodwork to talk about it. And, you know, all of a sudden, yes, there's a lot of activity in Tallahassee about it. But I wanted to ask you, who is involved with PORP and what does it do to fulfill its mission? Like, what is your mission statement and all that?
Yeah, so like I mentioned earlier, that we have something like about 30 volunteers. Some are come in and just help us for a little bit, and some are more regular, but we have a nationwide network. So we have people, I live in Pennsylvania, we have a couple other people living there, we have a podcast that's based out of Chicago, we have people based in California and Michigan, people who are engaged and care about our values, who are going either into their local communities, so we have like local advocates who are caring about issues ranging from environmental protection, science literacy, ethical government practices, and voter reform and everything. We have people going across, like, talking about issues in an evidence-based way in their local communities, but we also have a national infrastructure of people who do things as, you know, straightforward as moderating our social media, because that's a huge component of what we do, is talking to everyday people on social media. We have the writing team that I mentioned, people who are writing articles that are talking about not just national politics, but, you know, framing local issues in a national spotlight, you know, talking about voter reform happening in Maine, like ranked choice voting, what's going on here, let's blow it up to the national scale and say, hey, this is an issue we should be talking about. So we have local level people who are actually fighting on the ground to focus on policy. It's not about politics. It's not about voting for a particular politician. It's not voting Democrat, voting Republican. It's focusing on issues that affect Americans and making sure that Americans, the public interest is protected, I should say.
So just stay engaged. You guys are all about getting citizens to be engaged and be advocates for whatever they feel they can make a difference in.
Exactly. And if it's writing an article that's talking about, you know, healthcare reform, great. We'd be happy to have you on, have your voice. People who are writing books about particular subjects, we have them on for Skype interviews. We have politicians who are trying to focus on evidence-based issues. We've invited them on for podcasts, and they're trying to publicize these things and get people talking about these issues. And ultimately trying to, because the other element of this is that, you know, politics has become such a charged-up issue in our country that everyone's, you know, forming into camps, and it's forgetting, you know, the unity that should define us as Americans. Like, we all, at the same level, want pretty similar things. We want good health care. We want a fair, clean environment. We want our own economic prosperity. We want prosperity for our neighbors. We're trying to unify people through helping them understand that, you know, we're all supposed to be on the same team, and the way that we can unite into one team is through this idea of evidence-based policy making that benefits the public interest.
Well, and that's the key part of this, because I think right now all of our politics is emotional-based. Right? Everything is just reaction instead of...
Well, it's the news, the cable news.
Right, exactly.
After a while, CNN needs to stop carrying the same story.
I've said this since we've been on the air, like for 7 years, when emotions are high, intelligence is super low.
I like that.
You know, you just have to get out of that emotional moment where you can really
thinking.
Get it. Right. And just,
like my mom used to think, right?
Exactly. You know, Nani Raj.
Yeah, we just want to tell our listeners, we're speaking with Daniel Evans, and he is... The chairman of the board of the People of Reason and Progress, and it's PORP, and they're dedicated to so many things. And most importantly, their organization is not partisan.
Yeah, we are not partisan. The whole point of our organization is that, you know, it's not about who you voted for in the voting booth. It's about what issues you care about and trying to make things better for your everyday Americans in your local communities and nationwide. You know, anyone can engage with us. It's just understanding the concept of evidence in policy. And yeah, there are some things that we do. We advocate for policies that are on one particular side of the spectrum or the other, and that is how it is.
But it benefits everyone. But whatever you advocate for,
exactly.
I know. I went on the website this morning, and most of the things that you're advocating for benefits all of us. It's not like you're doing something only to benefit one part of the country or one state. You guys are actually in so many states, and you're advocates for so many things. And, you know, sometimes we talk about things when we were children growing up. And I was telling my friends on the show one day, you know, my mother and father weren't PhDs and didn't have masters, but they had a lot of common sense. And a lot of the things that they taught us as children, I am seeing it today playing out. Simple thing is, when someone passed away, they would allow you to grieve, and of course Hindus cremate. But my mother believed in ashes to ashes, dust to dust. She actually believed in that, and she believed it was good for the environment as well. And now you're seeing that people are having all these cremation pods, and they're planting a bush on somebody's remains, and, you know, Americans are doing it. And I often wonder, you know, these people that came before us, they really had a lot of sense when it came to human beings interacting with the universe.
Yeah, there is certainly a lot of sense that kind of gets passed down through cultural societies and through their culture that goes down through generations. But there's also the other component of, you know, when, you know, expertise in research and data and science, when that comes forward and says, hey, you know what, this is a better path. It's important to understand that, you know, scientists and people who care, like people who are experts in their field, are offering an opinion that is informed and educated and meant to, you know, benefit people. So you talk about, you know, we talk about climate change, for example. you know, there's an overwhelming majority, overwhelming consensus among the scientific community that this is happening, we should listen to that and know that the things that we have built on for the last several generations in terms of our infrastructure, our fossil fuel industry, everything, we need to start thinking about reform urgently, because if we continue on this path, we talked about prediction earlier, you know, if we continue on this path, there's going to be disastrous outcomes. So we need to be able to change from our culture and able to change from what we think is safe in order to maintain the benefit of the public interest. I keep saying that over and over again, but it's really the core idea. We want long-term benefit and long-term prosperity for all Americans, regardless of who you vote for, regardless of where you live. And that comes from not just respecting, you know, generations of cultural values, but also understanding when science and data comes forward and says, you know what, there needs to be a change.
So, Dan, why do you think so many politicians resist the scientific community and what the science is offering, which I believe is, I think it's the truth. I read a lot and I understand what I read, and I find it very difficult that some politicians just don't believe in science. What causes that?
I think it started with Punxsutawney Phil. It's all your fault in Pennsylvania. Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, I don't understand. I mean, the evidence is there. We see it. We can see it every single day that we wake up. We see climate change and we see what's happening with just the temperature here in Florida, right? Mm-hmm. So tell me, why do you think some people resist that?
There's no one clean answer, and there's a lot of answers that can seem really overly simplistic and just partisan, like, oh, these people just don't believe in science because they're motivated, they're paid off by the fossil. Like, there's a lot, it's more complicated than that, and it's really easy for people to fall into, like, oh, there's this one reason why every politician ignores science. It's a lot of detail. Personally, and speaking for myself and my personal opinion rather than on behalf of my organization, I think there's a lot of people who genuinely believe that the way that they see the world is correct, and the way that they believe that the policies they support are trying to, as I said, benefit the public interest. They're trying to make things better for themselves and for their families and for their friends and the public. They just happen to have been couched in this, and I was talking about science needing, you know, science facilitating change. They happen to be couched in this cultural ideology that they're comfortable in, that has
sometimes they're just fearful for change, because we've seen where in Florida a lot of our politicians that we thought weren't going to do certain things for our environment, they're actually doing it. And I think it's all about sitting down together face to face and talking with each other and showing them, this is what we found out, this is how we feel. And I think when people can sit down and talk to each other instead of about each other and about the environment, and we can see change in policy. But you've got to start that conversation.
Everyone should have a seat at the table, as long as everyone understands that data and evidence should be at that table. And if you are not willing to listen to evidence, or just really going to refuse things that legitimately debunk your opinion that is not based on evidence, then that's not a good way forward. We're open to anybody coming forward and advocating and wanting to make things better, as long as you understand that evidence is the way forward, and data and nonpartisan evidence.
With the last minute we have left, if someone wanted to get involved in evidence-based policy making, could you give us your website and your Twitter handle and whatever we can, so we could share it with our audience on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends? And I'm going to see if Ellen could put your website as well our website, because we have a lot of hits on our site. We have a lot of people that download our show, almost 2,000 people. You know, when I put 2,000 in my phone, it always comes up $2,000 instead of 2,000 people.
Well, from your fingers to God's ears.
So give us the website before we go to the commercial break. And I really want to say thank you. I appreciate you calling in. Give us the website.
Excellent. It's everything that we have is the official PORP. So theofficialPORP.org, Twitter @theofficialPORP. Facebook.com/theofficialPORP, Instagram, Reddit, everything is theofficialPORP. Come find us, talk to us. We would love to engage with anybody who cares about our values and wants to benefit.
Well, thank you for loving our environment. Policy. Thank you for loving the human race. And thank you for trying to make a difference. We appreciate you. And all the people that you work with, too.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, Ellen, so take it away.
Yeah, so we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we're going to be right back right after these brief messages with Kelly Therian and talking about organizational behavioral science.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee. author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Portions of Sita and Friends is brought to you by Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture Store inside the Merritt Square Mall at the Sears Wing. Save big on furniture working with a flexible family-owned store with all the brands you love, from Ashley, Serta, Coaster, Enso, and more. Brand new, warranties as well, and delivery and haul-away available at a fraction of the cost of most stores and delivered in 7 to 10 days. Free, no-credit checking and financing, and free interior design. The owner, Scott Palmer, has been in the mattress and furniture business for over 30 years, and Cloud 9 has been serving Central Florida for 7 years now. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture Store, available at 321-459-2473. Again, call them 321-459-2473 or visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MEDFAST Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral, and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000, 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends here on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. And we had quite a robust first half hour speaking with our friend Daniel Evans, who is the chairman of the Board of the People for Reason and Progress, PORP, and they were a social welfare organization dedicated to supplanting unreasonable political action with ethical, evidence-based discourse that benefits all of us. What a nice conversation about people who actually care about our universe, its people, its cultures on our planet, right? Mm-hmm. It was really good. And so our second segment is going to be with Kelly Therian. I said it?
Therian.
Therian.
Very good.
Therian. I said
very
it. It's
good.
Correct.
Therian.
It's a name I've never said before, but I said it. Therian. Kelly Therian. And Kelly is the product manager for professional development of ABA technologies.
Yes.
And we're going to let her explain what that means in a minute. But I know Ellen has a public service announcement to make for our friend Stanley Britz with Eckerd Connects, which I am a nominee.
I was just going to, you kind of blew my little intro.
You could do it again. You do a very nice job.
Sita Begee was nominated as one of the citizens to participate in this Brevard Walk of Fame. It is going to be held on February 23rd, 2019 from 6 to 9 p.m. And it's going to be at the Oasis at Palm Shores, which is basically the Space Coast Association of Realtors that is on Pineda Plaza Way in Palm Shores. So it is benefiting Eckerd Connects. And if you heard any of our shows, Stanley Briz is a very good friend of ours and friend of the shows. And he's been on several times to talk about all the great things that Eckerd Connects does. But this will be a fantastic evening. It always proves to be a fantastic night. You can get your tickets, I know, from Eckerd.org. You can get the tickets on there and also on Facebook. So make sure if you have that evening open, February 23rd, you come watch Sita, hopefully accept her award as her nominee.
You know me, I always feel like a winner. Just waking up, I feel like a winner.
Just the fact that you were nominated was such a
great
honor.
Yeah, I'm grateful I was nominated, and it's really nice coming, you know, when you think about my background and where, you know, I have 17 siblings. It's 18 of us. And what I have learned from the human behavior of just my sisters and brothers, myself, my cousins, and all the people back home, it's about 20 books in the making. But the thing is, I'm just grateful that I woke up this morning, that I have a voice, that I can walk, I can breathe, I can talk, and I can give back to the earth, to people who are listening, my family, give back a little bit of experience and advice. And I do believe everybody was born for a reason. And you just have to find your purpose, right? And who would have thought that a little girl who was born and raised in a little village in Coryell in Trinidad and Tobago, you know, I would be sitting under that lemon tree with my brother. We had no shoes, just probably a t-shirt on. You know, we had matted hair. We didn't really have brushes. we didn't have shampoo. We didn't have toothbrushes. But we sat under that tree and we waited for my mother to come home from cutting sugarcane. And I remember being 3 or 4 years old and, you know, I didn't know what the world was. But I do know that God has a plan for everyone. And I'm grateful that I have a voice and I could use my past experience to help people. But what a privilege and an honor it was to immigrate to the United States and be able to live in the greatest country in the world and give back a little bit. So being nominated, like you see, my dear Ellen, and sending you my way too, it's great. If I win, wonderful. If not, I'm just going to be just as grateful sitting
already
on that table and hearing my name and seeing it on the stage. And I'm bringing, my children are coming. Unfortunately, Dr. Begee can't attend. He was already booked for a medical conference that weekend. But God is good.
God is
just
great.
Just wake up every day and just be grateful. So Kelly's here, and you know, Kelly, your bio is extensive, and I did print it, but I'm going to have you talk a little bit about yourself. You're an experienced behavior analyst, and you've dedicated your life to working with people in the workplace and helping them to be the best they can be. So tell us about yourself and how you got into this business.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on the show today. And I just wanted to start, you know, my career has been spent in performance and leadership consulting, focus primarily on organizational behavior management. And what that means is I've really worked with leaders to help them to engage the human performers in their workplace to achieve business results by executing and implementing whatever strategy they'd laid out within the organization. And while I really appreciated that opportunity to work with individual leaders and teach them the science and teach, you know, one person at a time, give them those aha moments, now I'm working for ABA Technologies as the product manager, and the goal is to develop products and services that help to further disseminate that science of human behavior, because I really think if more people understood it, we could make an even bigger impact.
Right, and you know, we've talked about leadership before on our show, and what exactly is leadership? Leaders are in a good position to change the environment to influence human behavior. And behavior is influenced by our environment, like we just heard from Dan, and now you're doing the same thing, but in the workplace.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. And, you know, one of the biggest takeaways I would always ask for people to take with understanding the science of human behavior is that you can't control other people's behavior. You can only change your own. So what can you do to respond differently, to act differently in order to get the different results that you're looking for? So taking that opportunity to step back and look at people's perspective on things. Why are they engaging that behavior, and how am I responding that I could, you know, do something different to get a different outcome?
It's almost like you should be given a course in high school just before high schoolers leave to go into college or vocational or trade, because you know that's a key right there to the workplace. You cannot change other people; you can only change yourself. And how many times we've heard employees say, "Well, so and so did that and got away with it or whatever," but you really can't change that person. You could just change yourself.
Absolutely. We spend so much worry and frustration on other people that we're frustrated about instead of taking action of our own. What can we do about it? How many times do we, in fact, provide feedback to that individual instead of just talking about it, venting about it after work hours, instead of just directly addressing it and saying, hey, I don't appreciate that happened. What can we do differently, you know, tomorrow to get a different outcome?
Well, Ellen had a nice way of saying something to me once. I resigned from a really good job that I had for 10 years, and I was upset when I resigned. And Ellen said, you never should have sent that letter in when you were upset. Oh. Can you speak a little bit about it? Because how many people resign from good jobs or high-paying jobs just because of one thing?
Yes.
When do you say, okay, I'm going to go home, write the letter, not hit send?
Yes. I think, you know, getting that sort of frustration out and that venting out is definitely helpful, and we need to do that as well. But then once you've sort of had that opportunity to go to the gym and, you know, box it out or get the energy out, then take a step back, write that letter as angry as you want to make it, but then take a step back and really think about the other perspective. You know, put yourself in the shoes of the other person. I like to think about it in terms of intent versus impact. So I believe most people want to do well and make friends and encourage people and see good things for their organization, for each other. But sometimes they have an impact on others that they don't even realize. So it might be that boss that you're so frustrated with didn't even know that what they were doing when they were stopping by the office and interrupting you 10 times a day was really interfering with you meeting your other objectives. So how can you change that behavior? How can you provide that feedback? Or, you know, just, again, step back, understand what their intention was. Their intention is to keep you updated on what's going on, but the impact is they're preventing you from getting other things done. So how can you communicate that to get a different outcome?
So do you think, when I wrote that you were coming on a show, a friend of mine was, we were having a conversation at the gym, and we were saying, do you think the behaviors in a workplace is cultural? Because, for example, she was saying, well, Indian people who are engineers, they're always so passive. They always say yes. And then some people from different cultures, they question things. Now, I do notice that with a lot of my friends, not just immigrants like myself, who are really naturalized and here, legally safe. I'm just going to get that out.
Just throwing that in
just
there.
Just throwing that. But the thing is, you see, like, I see people from Haiti, Jamaica, Trinidad, different places in the Caribbean, and they're so eager to work because they came to America with this idea that we want this opportunity to work. So taking that into consideration, they don't really question too many people. Mm. So it's kind of a cultural thing. Do you see that? I mean, how do we address that with some people who, in other words, unscripted Sita Begee style, they do have a big mouth and they're very vocal, while others are not?
Well, that's an interesting one. So I think in a leadership position, so managers and leaders should be looking at that and trying to draw people out that if they are a little bit more quiet, you know, to spend the time to get to know them and understand what their drivers are, what do they want to see happening at the workplace to help address it. But culture, you know, really comes into place across the organization on the things that are being rewarded in the organization all across different levels of leadership. When you think about ethics and compliance within organizations, is it being modeled by the higher ups in the organization? So if they're seeing others, you know, engaging in this behavior, seeing that when people speak up and question things, do they get a positive outcome from that? Do they get heard? Or do those people get sort of, I don't know, punished for having made those comments?
Well, because, you know, I know years ago we had a friend who was a physician, and they had a staff meeting, and he spoke out about the staffing in the emergency department. Mm. He spoke out that he thought they didn't have enough nurses and support staff to help the doctors because the doctors were doing the vital signs. The doctors were triaging the patients, and all of a sudden, I mean, something happened and he had to leave. I'm not sure if they terminated him, but he said that he had a funny feeling that it was based on how vocal he was in the staff meeting. So, I mean, that is something that I think people have to take into consideration when you're working with such large organizations too.
Absolutely. And I think that again, along these lines that you can't control other people's behavior, you can only control your own. I would really encourage people to take a more active role, and if you see something, say something, in terms of providing feedback. If you see something you like and you want to see again in the future, let people know that. If you see something you didn't like and it had a negative impact on you, on others in the organization, on the department, on the result, on the customer, whatever the case may be, to say something about it. So often it's sort of held in, or, you know, held for later for an end of year performance review, instead of in the moment providing the feedback and giving the person the opportunity to, again, do better. Because, again, I believe people want to do well at work, and they want to be successful and be recognized. So how can we, as leaders, put into place what we need to set them up to be successful?
Right, right.
And to your point, too, you don't even, sometimes as a leader, you don't even know what you're doing, that whole intention and impact piece. So, I just have, like, one example. I remember working for a large organization, and the managers sent a particular department, like, flowers and a cake for their birthdays, and unfortunately didn't do it for another department. And it wasn't, the intention wasn't to
hurt anybody
or do any of that. But what leaders don't understand is that once you make a commitment to something, you have to make that commitment to everyone that's in the organization that would see something like that. Because even something like that could make it, could go hostile environment. It could go anywhere.
Well,
right?
It hurts, when your feelings are hurt, it does affect your job, right?
It affects your work.
I know we had a director of nurses once that would come on the floor, and she would say good morning based on her mood. So she would say good morning to certain people, and she wouldn't say good morning to others. And that was a topic of conversation when people went out for lunches or dinner. Well, did you get a good morning today? Did you get a hello? Well, I don't think she took her meds, whatever.
Oh,
and so it causes a lot of grief. But one of the questions we have for you, too, from our audience, what should people know about the science of human behavior?
Absolutely. Great question. I think, really building your understanding of behavior allows us to better understand one another. And again, I think it could lead to a more positive, better world for all of us and better society if we would just better understand ourselves and what's motivating and driving us, and better understand others. And so, again, understanding people's intentions versus the impact that they're having, and what can we do about that. Behavior is lawful. It makes sense to the performer. So when we sit back and scratch our heads and say, well, I don't understand why that
behavior
nurse
is lawful.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Listen to this.
That it didn't make sense that they aren't saying hello to everybody. What's going on there? So again, just understanding that performer, putting yourself in their shoes. Why are they doing that? It makes sense to the person. We do what works for us. So again, if you just understand that, as much as we might scratch our head, it makes sense to that person. So if we can better understand that, we can make an impact on what happens. And I want to go into a quick example about intent versus impact. So again, thinking that we always want to do good things, I just wanted to share just kind of a fun example that even as somebody in this field who's worked within behavior and thought about this for my career and after my education, my daughter's 6, and when she was 3, she was a bit speech delayed. She just wasn't quite meeting some of the milestones that her peers were. So I took her to a speech therapist to get her evaluated to figure out, what's going on? Why isn't she speaking? And after working with the speech therapist, quickly realized that she was doing very well in terms of receptive language. She understood words, understood what people were saying to her, but she just wasn't choosing to vocalize. So again, thinking about that, it made sense to her. People do what works for them. She didn't need to talk, is what we quickly figured out, because mom was being incredibly helpful and anticipating her needs and wants. And if somebody came over that didn't understand something she said, like grandma or dad, I helped to, this is what she's saying. I intervened for her, interpreted for her to help her. Where if she was interacting with somebody else, like a stranger, and mom wasn't there to the rescue, she would have had to deal with the what? Can you say that again? Say it differently until she verbalized. So it was a hard learning for me as trying to be this helpful mom of just my impact of being overly helpful with my daughter.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, oftentimes we see all these little things on Facebook or Instagram, and it says, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. Mm. I think in the workplace that is so true.
Mm-hmm.
It's how you communicate with people. It's not what, because sometimes it's your tone of voice.
Yes.
What you say, right? So we just want to tell our listeners, we're speaking with Kelly Therrien. Uh-huh. And Kelly is an experienced behavior analyst who has dedicated her work to improving the workplace through organizational behavior management. Kelly has worked with organizations across the United States and Canada. And we're so glad that you took the time to come on our show. So Ellen, we talk about so many topics on our show, and this certainly is an important one, because we're living in times when people just sprout off and say things like, immigrants are coming to take my job.
Right.
Or he wants to come here and take my job. Nobody's taking anybody's job. Holding a job is a responsibility. is loyalty to your company. These people are trusting you with a profession, with a job, whether it's a janitor in a hospital or a nurse or a physician. You have to be the best you can be. And I like what Kelly is doing because they're giving people the tools to go out and be part of the organization. And they're leading by setting such an example. So, you know, we don't hear things like this. We set people loose and you give them a job and a uniform and you say, go ahead and conquer the world. But you really need to know how to interact with the people around you, because we've seen where some people in their 50s and 60s, their bosses are in their 20s.
Right?
So how, I mean, I've heard nurses say, well, my manager is only 25 years old and I've been in the profession for 60 years. How does an older person cope with something like that?
I think it's a lot of the same thing. So providing feedback. So much of my work with leaders was around getting feedback. So doing 360 type interviews to collect feedback and data about how is your leader doing. And it was fascinating how direct reports would provide feedback to me, you know, always a little bit anxious about what's going to happen with this and will there be any retaliation for it. But then I would do like these follow-up interviews. So give the feedback to the leader. They would implement some things they wanted to work on, come back a couple of months later and check again with the direct reports to see how are they doing? Are they making improvements? And it was so funny how going back and doing those checkpoints that those direct reports would say, oh my gosh, you know, he's made such great improvements. He's not interrupting anymore. He's, you know, being respectful of my time, so on and so forth. That's fantastic. So have you told him that? Well, no. I was just waiting for you to come back and tell him again. Like, come on, just providing that feedback and taking more ownership and doing that. You know, you can do it in a respectful, objective way and just say, hey, this is what's happening and here's the impact it's having on me. You know, can we do something different going forward? Have the conversation.
Right. So you apply behavior analysis on organizations, but it sounds like it could be applied to a lot of areas. Is this true?
It's absolutely true. There's so many different applications for behavioral science, and there's just a lot of people out in the world working on these things that I just wanted to make sure that people are aware of. So I know a lot of my peers that work with children, whether it's people with developmental disabilities, with autism, people that are typically developing, you know, they just work on lots of different things where they're having behavior challenges, whether at home or at school. I've got a peer that works with traumatic brain injury. So if you've got somebody that's gone through that sort of trauma, to teach them then some independent living skills, how to get back to some normal. Classroom management for teachers. Health and fitness is another one. Organizations, of course. Sustainability is another one. So there's people in behavioral science working on that. So how do we get people to reduce their energy consumption or recycle? How do we make it more likely that we do that? So often we'll put policies and things into place where we're sort of punishing people for doing the wrong things as opposed to rewarding for the right things. So anywhere that people are performing, if you can sort of think about flipping it that way and rewarding the right behaviors or the things you want to see more of, is where behavior analysis can really be applied.
Right, and I'm sure there's something we can do today, right? What is one thing we can do today to start applying the science of human behavior?
I think, you know, take a step back, consider your own behavior. You know, don't blame people for what they're doing, but rather take that objective look. Try to understand what they're doing and why. It makes sense to them, and what can you do about it? So if we could just take a kinder approach, step back, take the emotion out of it and objectively just see what's going on. Provide that feedback, you know, if there's an opportunity.
And there are some people who say, well, all this is common sense. Why do we need training on the science of human behavior? What do you say to those people?
I think we touched on that earlier. It might be common sense. And yes, being kind to people and providing the feedback is absolutely, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. But you know what? I didn't have a career in consulting for that long because it was common practice. So I would just encourage people to make sure that
and
you
keep
are.
In mind, too, that the retention rates of companies now is not what it used to be. You know, usually 6 to 7 years. And to lose that kind of intellectual data that somebody has that's been working for you for 6 to 7 years is really hard to replace. And it certainly gets replaced at a price of a downtime. And I think we went so many years, like in the 80s, of, you know, everybody got like Six Sigma jammed down their throat and all these processes and so forth. And we lost the human element. You know, the Jack Welch's of GE, where it was, you know, this forced rankings with reviews and, you know, always there's always a bottom 10% and you always get rid of those. That took the behavioral part out of it, because then it was all managing by statistics and managing by a P&L statement rather than really taking into consideration that these people had families and,
right.
You know, and Kelly's point, wants to do a good job every
right.
day. It's not like they're walking
well,
in
and
saying,
well, not only that, we have to look at what's happening in today's world. Technology has taken over so many jobs, right?
Yes.
And we have a workforce that's not trained. So how do we get people who are trained, like with the nursing, I can speak for other professions, but in the medical professions, you have doctors who are frustrated with the technology part of it because they want to take care of patients. right? How do you, they want to see their patients, they want to touch them and take care of them, feel them, know what's going on with the abdomen. They just don't want to poke their head in and say, how are you doing,
right?
So how do you mesh the two with the young people with the expertise and the older people with this kind of experience?
Yeah, I think it's really, you know, getting them to work together, allowing mentoring opportunities where you can before we keep talking about the mass exodus that's coming with a number, large number of people that are going to be retiring in the next few years. So what can we do to get the young people paired up with them to learn not just the technical skill of the job, but some of the more nuances and, you know, politics within the organization and how do we best interact and how do we get things done here? Who needs to be influenced? How do we work together and effectively communicate?
Right. And, you know, it used to be that when a man had a job, it, you know, in my religion, my mom used to say, when your cleanliness is next to godliness, but she says, when you have a job and you're making a shilling, be grateful for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it used to be people were so grateful for a job. But now we have organizations that can't function because people call in sick at the drop of a hat.
Mm-hmm.
What can we do to incentivize more people to show, to be more loyal to their jobs, to have pride in wearing the uniform with a logo? Somebody thought about a loan. Somebody thought about a business. Somebody build that brick and mortar place so you can have a job. How do we instill these values that we've lost?
Yes, I think incentivizing those things. So what can we do to reward those things? Showing up, looking the part, for the job, going above and beyond. How do we reward those things and show that that's valued in the organization? Not by doing a forced ranking and getting rid of those bottom, you know, 3%,
right.
But rather, you know, again, rewarding the things that you want rather than punishing the things that you don't want. How do we bring people along, show them,
or benefits, even with benefits, you know, we need to start looking. I mean, if you speak to employees, you'll find out, you know, everyone have a mortgage, a car payment, car insurance, health insurance. They have children they have to send to college or trade school or whatever. I think it behooves a lot of us to sit down and look at the salaries too, the benefits of what people are earning. It makes a big difference. It really does. Because I see it in my job. I've seen it in working in Chicago, Indiana, all over the place. And you've worked in Canada. What was the difference in work ethics in Canada and the United States? Was there anything different?
That's an interesting one. I think that the pay, because it was primarily in oil and gas, so there was a lot of pay there, so a lot of people came from all over the place to go there, and they were happy to go to work because it meant money. I mean, they could easily equate it into the large dollars. Yes.
Yeah. When you get paid, right? So if somebody wanted to find you on the web and get some of your expertise or maybe connect with you, how would they find you?
Yeah, thank you. I'm on LinkedIn, and it's just Kelly Therian, or of course, if you're locally, like Brevard County, there's the Association for Behavior Analysis is on Facebook, is another great resource with a lot of people working in this field in those different applications. So whether it's me or just another behavior analyst, I would really encourage people to learn more about it and seek us out. We are all over the place.
Yeah. I've often said, like, when you apply for a job, of course, now everything is online. And, you know, when you know that area where it says, you know, race and gender and all that, I've often said they should take all of that out.
Human.
Mm. Just put human and go to work and make an honest dollar and give it 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you work and you leave feeling fulfilled and you give your job the best you can be and to your patients or whatever, I'm always thinking like a nurse, you leave there feeling so wonderful about what you do. And I mean, everyone has a purpose, right? And they need to just find it and do it.
Yeah.
So with 30 seconds or less, what would you say to encourage someone who's in a position right now that needs to hear something positive about their job and why they should stay or who they should talk to?
Well, I would say to look to your customers. You know, look for where you are making an impact and see how people appreciate what it is that you're producing or the customers you're interacting with. Look for the reward there of, you know, just a good today's job and what that does for you.
Another fantastic week here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and we will return next week at 1 p.m. live right here on AM 1510 WWBC.